So they're able to see underneath the earth and thus go in and grab all the resources from other countries when they detect these valuable mineral deposits under the earth, but are also able to detect oil deposits, and that's exactly what this USGS geologist was talking about when he said, hey, they found these tremendous oil drilling opportunities. They were using torsional vortex imaging to find the oil. Now, the second thing that this geologist told Mark was, in addition to drilling for 3 to 4 years ago, now that's an important thing to keep in mind, 3 to 4 years ago, the second thing he said was, in addition to looking for oil deposits under the Gulf of Mexico, fabulous oil deposits, was they expect land masses to arise out of the Gulf of Mexico. So when I saw this whole oil spill thing, I was way ahead of everybody else, not because I'm any smarter. No, I'm just the same intelligence as anybody else. But I had the foreknowledge that they expect land masses to arise out of the Gulf of Mexico. Nobody else knew this, and I've been posting it, but of course, you know, your voice gets lost on the internet, email, like a voice in Yankee Stadium during a World Series game. I mean, millions of other people are putting out stuff, and, you know, right, and nobody's going to hear me, so I try to repeat it over and over again. They expect land masses to arise out of the Gulf of Mexico. Please spread the word. What that means is everybody living in the Gulf doesn't know what's going to happen to them, has no idea as to what's going to happen to them soon. The bulging. Now, I've read a book on geology. I studied some geology recently, and I explained about these mantle plumes, how they come up like a lava lamp. Just visualize a lava lamp coming up from the core of the earth, and the molten iron core is so hot. It's like that electric element in your bedroom lava lamp or your son's bedroom lava lamp. I guess everybody has a lava lamp, right? So that molten iron core is so hot, it's like the electricity heating up the lava column. And then the magma, which is again on the outer portion of the circular earth, that magma, which is molten rock, remember the word magma means molten rock, that magma starts to get, it's very thick, not very liquidy. Okay, so it doesn't flow very well. And it's sort of like, you know, it's a shell surrounding the earth, but not the outer shell. It's sort of like one of the inner shells further out than the molten iron core. Well, that magma starts to get hot because now this boiling, increasingly hot molten iron starts to drill like a drill bit, like a hot drill bit going through the magma up, penetrating toward the surface, creating a hot magma tunnel, and that's what's called a mantle plume or a thermal plume. And these mantle plumes get up, and now recently I spoke to Mark, and his USGS geologist friend told Mark, this is just from a recent conversation, that what's happening now is the gases are building up. The mantle plume, I guess, and he didn't mention mantle plume, but from my reading, I know that's what it is. The gases, there's so many gases dissolved in that magma. There's hydrogen sulfide, there's methane, a whole lot of carbon dioxide. A lot of gases, they begin to come up too with the magma. And when that plume, that column, that tunnel of magma comes up toward the surface, it gets embedded in the layers. There's a marginal layer between the outer border of the magma and the crust, the lithospheric crust of the seabed right above it. So right under the seabed crust is a big layer of a big airspace that's been opened up, a gas space. And it's like pumping up a raft, you know, or pumping up two layers even visualize one of those blood pressure testers where they wrap this thing around your arm, and it's really basically a flat, two-layered, sealed tube, right? Everybody knows what a blood pressure tube is that they wrap around your arm. And then what do? They pump it up. They start squeezing the squeeze bulb and pumping air into it. So now this flat band that goes around your arm begins to be bulging upward because it's being filled with air. Likewise, that's similar to the two layers you have right below the lithosphere, joining the lithosphere and the mantle margin below it. Gases are pumped into there. It begins to bulge more and more because of the pump that we're talking about, pumping gas, is the mantle plume itself, filled with molten magma and gas. See, I'm getting redundant a lot of this stuff, but it's important because I'm causing people to visualize it and get it really firmly in their minds about as to what's happening here, because nobody knows. Nobody's being told what's going on here. And people have to know. The public is being completely deluded, and it's going to result in catastrophic deaths of millions of people. Harping on this until people understand it fully and they get a picture in their mind. Foreign troops in Fort Polk is in Gulfport, Mississippi. I think they've evacuated those.
I
remember reading that Gulfport was evacuated. So there you go. That's a good indication of what's something about to happen. I'm glad you brought that up.
Right.
When you see the government facilities around that danger area fleeing, watch out.
Right.
Somebody once said that about two, like one of these possible attacks, these possible false flag attacks that the power elite pull off. They say, like, for example, if something's going to happen in Chicago, you know, whatever, you see people fleeing out of there. You see the big powers fleeing. Like Oklahoma City, what happened the day before Oklahoma? They were told, well, the FBI agents were told not to go to the Murrah building that next day. They were told to stay home.
Yep.
So you see a lot of people fleeing in advance. There's your sign. So watch for, we could have listeners just doing nothing but that. Some listeners dedicated to observing, evacuating facilities that might be sensitive or part of owned and considered prized valuable facilities by the power elite, by the government. If they're considered valuable, they will evacuate them. Here's an example of that happening. The Central Intelligence Agency back in 2005, John Moore has reported this, I'm sure, when he was on your program, and he put it on his DVD.
Yep.
Global warming, something like that. He has a DVD out.
Yep.
About this whole thing. And he said that they moved the Central Intelligence Agency from the Atlantic, near the Atlantic coast, Langley, Virginia, to Denver, which is far inland, a lot safer from this threat of tsunamis. Also, they moved the Environmental Protection Agency away from the Washington, D.C. area, away from the Atlantic coast, and moved them out, too. Didn't even tell their people, didn't give their people the ability to access their own documents. Their EPA employees could not do their jobs. So they weren't even telling their own people. They just moved them out of there. There's a clue that something's about to happen. So look for the same kind of clues along the Gulf of Mexico. Just like we look for the clues of the toads swarming out of the ground and the insects and worms coming out of the ground and animals, dogs, cats, squirrels, birds acting crazy and wild, running away. Those are all signs. Likewise, when we see the rats, the human rats, scurrying, there's a similar clue that something's going to happen. My friend Mark... So that back then, 3-4 years ago, he told them that they expect land masses to arise. So now we're seeing the rising of the land masses about to occur in the Gulf of Mexico. Now, what the geologist told Mark just recently was that these gases are building up, the ones I described to you, in pockets underneath the surface of the seabed of Gulf of Mexico. But here's the thing. What he told Mark was that layer of gas underneath the crust of the earth encompasses an area that forms a triangle. Now here's how large the triangle is. One corner of the triangle would be located off the east coast of Texas in the Gulf of Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
The other corner of the triangle is way down near the Lesser Antilles in the eastern Caribbean, very close to, further east than Florida.
Right.
Further south in Florida. Okay, that's a pretty long leg of a triangle, right? From the right off the Texas east coast to all the way down to way southeast of Florida.
Yeah.
Now the third leg of the triangle extends all the way up to Yellowstone volcanic caldera in Wyoming. So you got this huge triangle. And Yellowstone is part of the equation. The gases are building up there, too. the whole one side of the country will be, you know, devastated from what I've been reading. We have to try to prepare for these things. We have to talk about them, you know. We can't just say, oh, don't, you know, it's too depressing, I don't even want to talk about it. You can't. You have to try to plan for survival. But real quickly, let me just, I have to say one thing, though. This whole triangle that we're talking about, going from one corner is the Yellowstone in Wyoming, the other corner is off the east coast of Texas, and the third corner of the triangle is way down in the Lesser Antilles, way southeast of Florida. Well, underneath this entire triangle, which encompasses major portions of the United States and also the Caribbean Sea, there's a huge gas pocket under there. That's what this geologist was saying, that the whole thing is one big layer of gas building up. I mean, that's just such a fantastic, colossal danger. And nobody's being told about it. This is the first time you're hearing about it. This is one of the theories because of the actual purpose, one of the many purposes of the chemtrails is to create this sphere, spherical aluminum or metallized, electrically conductive sphere around the Earth. When that happens, you can create a capacitor. Now, a capacitor is one of the most capacitor and a resistor, I guess, in addition to a resistor. The capacitor is the most common electrical element component used in the electricity and in electronics. Every piece of equipment that you have, your TV, your VCR, your radios, computers, every one of them have capacitors. And all a capacitor is two plates, basically, two electrically conductive plates separated by an insulator or a dielectric. And on one plate, you have an excess of electrons, electrical charge, and on the other plate you have a deficiency of electrical charge. It's a charge separator. It takes electric charge and separates it. That's on a massive, colossal, cosmic scale. That's what this bubble around the Earth would act like, a capacitor, because one of the plates is collecting charge from the ionosphere. And, of course, the solar winds are nothing but huge electric charge generators. The sun blows out positive electric charge particles called protons, which form in gases called plasma. That's positive. Plasma is positively charged gas. And also, the sun blows out electrons. So all these charge particles are collected along this sphere. If you were to build a sphere like they're building with these chemtrails, you could, maybe they could do experiments. I don't know much about Tesla technology, but it's easy to visualize how they could pump up, create a lot of high voltage above a certain point on the Earth, on the sphere surrounding the Earth, and create a high voltage potential difference in electrical energy between the bubble and the Earth itself. Then when you have a high difference in potential, that's what happens when a lightning strikes. You have lots of electrical charge build up in a cloud, and that charge becomes so intense that it creates such a tremendous electrostatic field, that all of a sudden it penetrates the air gap between the cloud and the ground, and you have a huge bolt of electricity. Well, that's probably what they're doing with this HARP project.
Possibly. Maybe this was the one of the main intentions for constructing HARP, was to look into the Earth's crust and you know, for signs of shifting and magma and all that other stuff, along with all the other things we know that HARP can do.
Yeah, I mean, maybe you're right. I just don't know much about it, but chemtrails would probably figure into the whole HARP technology.
Right.
This torsional vortex imaging is really, from what I've been reading, is what they use to look into the Earth. And so, of course, you know, not only are they finding mineral deposits, valuable mineral deposits, but they're also finding the bulges and the mantle plumes that exist underneath the Earth, and they know all about it. And that's why they're acting so scared now, the power elite. They're trying to find a way to go underground. It's not recent that they've been scared. It's for many years, because they've been many years ahead of us in knowing about Planet X coming into our solar system. So they see these mantle plumes building up. They know the Earth's core is heating up. They know why it's heating up, because of these saturated, plasma-saturated comets, including the big guy, this brown dwarf star, Planet X, are coming by, creating magnetic fields that are, whose invisible magnetic flux lines are cutting into Earth's core, heating up Earth's molten iron core, like, just like a transformer would heat up, would get heated up by its own magnetic induction. So they know the whole story. They know, they've been knowing what's been going on for years. In fact, let me just read you real quick. New York Times, I got the article right, got a whole bunch of newspaper articles that I photocopied from the library archives. This is the actual article from the New York Times, Saturday, June 19th, 1982. So we're talking, 38 years ago. Yeah, 28 years ago, I'm sorry. 28 years ago. Sunnyvale, California, June 19, 1982. A pair of American spacecraft may help scientists detect what could be a tenth planet or a giant object billions of miles away, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration said Thursday. Scientists at the space agency's Ames Research Center said the two spacecraft, Pioneers 10 and 11, which are already farther into space than any other man-made objects, might add to knowledge of a mysterious object believed to be beyond the solar system's outermost known planets. The space agency said that persistent irregularities in the orbits of Uranus and Neptune suggest some kind of mystery object is really there, with its distance depending on what it is. And they continue on, and they say, it may be a dark star. Now, a dark star, a star is huge. We know that our sun is a star, and our sun has a mass of 330,000 Earths. That's how massive our sun is. Well, this is a dark star. Of course, it's a baby star. So instead of being 330,000 Earth masses, it may only be 1,000 Earth masses. I say that facetiously. That's pretty big. They're calling it a dark star. This is NASA. So now we have NASA on record calling this object, saying that this object's mass has got to be at least 1,000 Earth masses, indirectly, by inference, because they're calling it a dark star. So there we go. This is not speculation that this is a brown dwarf star whose mass is about 1,000 Earth masses or more. This is NASA talking. Here's another article. New York Times, next year, following year. That was, I just read you June 8, 19, 1982. Here's January 30th, 1983, on the eve of the launch of the Infrared Astronomical Satellite, IRAS. New York Times, January 30th, 1983. The title of this article from the New York Times, which I have right in front of me, it's not a printout, it's the actual article photocopied. Clues get warm in the search for Planet X. Quote, and I'll just read a little bit of it. Something out there beyond the farthest reaches of the known solar system seems to be tugging at Uranus and Neptune. Some gravitational force keeps perturbing the two giant planets, causing irregularities in their orbits. The force suggests a presence far away and unseen, a large object that may be the long-sought Planet X. Evidence assembled in recent years has led several groups of astronomers to renew the search for the 10th planet. They are devoting more time to visual observations with the 200-inch telescope at Mount Palomar in California. They are tracking two Pioneer spacecraft, which are now approaching the orbit of distant Pluto, to see if variations in their trajectories provide clues to the source of the mysterious force. And I'll just interject there. That was a clever project that they did with Pioneer 10 and 11, which was also mentioned in a previous New York Times article that I read. They sent out two space probes designed to just keep on going and going into as far out as they could be. One was sent in one direction. One was sent in a direction completely opposite to where they detected the presence of Planet X, its gravitational force. Completely opposite direction. That was Pioneer 11. Pioneer 10 was sent out in the direction of where they detected this huge gravitational pulling force, the force that was pulling on the outer planets, Uranus and Neptune. So when this way they could have one space probe would act as a control model to show you, you know, the normal trajectory and what is considered to be normal, like a baseline control. The other Pioneer 10 was the one that was actually the experimental one that was believed and expected to feel the gravitational pull from Planet X. So Pioneer 10 would be pulled off of its trajectory slightly, and they could detect from the radio transmission data signals that were being transmitted back from Pioneer 10 back to Earth, they could detect how much of a perturbation, how much pulling was being exerted on the Pioneer 10 space probe. And they proved it with Pioneer 10 and 11. So it was like an open and shut case. Yeah, it's there. There's no two ways about it. It's out there. You know, I sent this New York Times, January 30th. You can get it. Not only can you get the date, you can get the actual JPEG photo of it, high resolution, because I put it on a CD along with some other Planet X news articles from major publications going back in the 80s. And I sent it to Marshall Masters out in California. He put it up on his website, so here's how you can get it. All you do is Google, or start page, actually, use your search engine, and type in, first of all, youwusa.com. That's the website of Marshall Masters. Then type in a space, and then type in the three words, New York Times. And you'll come up with the first article. It's titled, it's a commentary by Marshall Masters called Debunking the Planet X Debunkers, those who try to debunk Planet X. He's debunking them. And he included in that article this actual JPEG photograph, high-resolution picture of the entire article that I just began reading to you. So you can get it by going there. It's the power elite, which control NASA. NASA is controlled by the National Security Agency,
yep.
And which is the same secret intelligence agency that controls the Central Intelligence Agency. These men are designed to operate in secrecy, and they claim that it's for national security, but it's for criminal security. Their own concealment of their nefarious activities, and that's why they call it national security. We should be seeing all the evidence, that's all the information that's being brought out by the NASA space program, but we're not. NASA, the truth is that NASA employees have to sign a contract stating that they will keep secret whatever work that is they produce and whatever discoveries they make. So they're under contract to keep that secret from you, any kind of catastrophe that will occur. In fact, there have been news articles from NASA that was published, I believe, by some of the major news organizations several years back, stating that if there was a catastrophe that was about to occur on Earth, they would not tell us about it. And of course, we can sense why they wouldn't tell us, because there's nothing they can do about it. Well, actually, there is a lot we could do if we knew about it. We could prepare ourselves. But they claim they don't want to tell us because they don't want to panic us. And if we get panicky, it could save a lot of lives, but they don't care about our lives. What they want to do is protect their fragile economic system from collapsing, protect their stock market from collapsing, protect their dollar from collapsing, and also keep the people obedient to them. As we said before, the main thing that the power elite are fearful of is that people will go into a panic and thus disobey the rules of their masters in the government. They are blood-sucking parasites. They are scorpions.
Yes.
You know, of course, you couldn't say it in the mainstream media, because they would never let. It would never even get to the point where I could get through the door, or you could get through the door of MSNBC or CBS or CNN. But that's okay. We don't want to be there, because I think people don't want to watch. The public doesn't want to believe them anyways. More and more people are learning about Planet X and the Earth disasters that are occurring, and that's our purpose. As more people get on board, the word begins to spread like the proverbial wildfire. And we reach critical mass, like in a nuclear reaction. You reach critical mass where neutrons are, atoms are striking one another, nuclei are hitting, and all of a sudden the number and the sheer number of collisions begins to increase exponentially, and that's what we call critical mass. Likewise, with the public, as people begin to talk about it more and more, it reaches a point where the information begins to just flow out at a great rate, and the majority of the population then becomes aware of what's happening. So that's what we're doing right now. We're racing against time. How much time do we have to reach that critical mass of public awareness, public enlightenment? But what I had suspected seems to be happening, and that is over the last couple of years, last year or so, I've been suspecting that we're going to see an exponential increase in all types of meteorological severe meteorological events as well as geological events. And we're seeing it now. For example, the summers, the hot, we're experiencing hotter summers, more record high temperatures than ever before. It's becoming, record heat is becoming the norm rather than the exception. At the same time, we're seeing in the wintertime, because of this cold air being swooped down from the north, from the northern hemisphere, we're seeing the coldest winters also. But now I think we're going to get beyond the colder winters will be offset by the much hotter summers and even warmer winters because, again, this Earth is becoming heated up more and more by the magnetic fields that have generated magnetic fields being induced into our planet's iron core by surrounding passing comets and Planet X as it draws closer and closer. Planet X now, I believe, from watching the jet stream patterns on the Weather Channel, and it's a good thing I've been watching them over the years, I know what the typical W-shaped wave looked like from 2004 to 2009, a huge W superimposed on the United States. That was the jet stream pattern that you could expect. Now, in 2009, that W became a huge U-shaped jet stream pattern, extending all the way up from at its highest point up to Alaska and down into the Gulf of Mexico, and being as just as wide as the W, being the width of this U covering the entire width of the United States. That was a tremendous change in the jet stream, and it told me that these planets were coming in now at a different angle, or coming in, getting closer to the ecliptic plane, which is the disk, that invisible disk in space about which all the planets revolve around, around the sun. It's coming up from below us, like underneath our table, more or less. Visualize our solar system disk of revolving planets as a huge circular revolving table. And there's this bullet coming up from below the table, coming up through the bottom of the table, piercing the table, and then looping over the top of the sun, and then coming back down over the sun, and then crashing back through the top of the table, down through the bottom, and then going back down underneath, down to the floor where it came from. That's the kind of looping path that we're seeing with this planet. And now it's because of the changes in the jet stream patterns that I'm seeing, the tremendous changes going from a W to a capital U, bigger than the W. And now it's changing further. Now we're getting these letter O's, jet stream O's. The Weather Channel calls them upper level lows and upper level highs. And these O's, which sort of describe the jet stream anomalies that we have never seen before, never seen O's before. These O's are about the size of several states like Indiana, Ohio, and Tennessee all together. That's how big they are. And you'll see them in the center of these big jet stream O's on the Weather Channel. If you look, they don't talk about them, but they do show them on the weather map of the United States. You'll see them off the coast of the U.S. We just recently saw them off the coast of New York and Massachusetts. And now it's somewhere within the country itself, within the states, that you'll see these O's. That's another indication to me that this Planet X has now changed from its position below the ecliptic. Now it's coming through the ecliptic. We're going to see major changes. Because if you go to the Mesopotamian text that described by, recounted by Zechariah Sitchin in his landmark book, The 12th Planet, these ancient Mesopotamian astronomers, when they saw Planet X come by on previous incursions into our solar system, previous 3,600-year incursions, they said Nibiru, which they called it Nibiru at the time, meaning the crossing, the planet of the crossing, they said Nibiru will come in around the station of Jupiter, in other words, around the orbital path of Jupiter. Well, indeed, Gilbert Erickson, who seems to have some government connections, says it's also going to come in between, you know, around that same area, which would be between the asteroid belt and Jupiter. So it's, I believe it's coming in now, judging by the drastic change in these jet stream patterns, which means Planet X is probably right now becoming the new kid on the block. If your house is planet Earth and your next door neighbor is planet Mars, and then the neighbor beyond planet Mars is the asteroid belt, and then you find an empty lot that used to be the space between the asteroid belt and Jupiter is now filled up by a new house, a new house on the block. You see a tremendous explosion in all kinds of meteorological and geological events, earthquakes, volcanic eruptions. I don't like to talk about these things, but I have to. We have to warn people to get prepared. Mark Hazelwood was given disinformation. Mark Hazelwood wrote a book called Blindsided, where he laid out all this information about Planet X. But he was told by certain people who were feeding him information that it would pass in 2003. And when it turned out not to come in 2003, he became discredited. Well, the bus was late, but the bus still exists. The bus is still in existence. It's still coming by, and we're seeing all the signs right now. Getting back to what you're talking about, the disasters, there are many things that we can do to protect ourselves. First thing we're going to see is straight-line wind storms. People have to protect their homes. One thing to do is to take care of those trees that are close by the home, because you're going to see virtually everyone is going to have huge trees blown down. If they're close enough to their house, that tree is going to crush their house and perhaps kill the people in it and destroy the house. I see pictures, videotape of it every day, or very often on the Weather Channel. We just had major wind storms in New England, your area, and people have to protect themselves. One way to do it is to just cut down the top of the tree. You know, I thought about this. If it's too much to cut down a huge oak tree that's big enough to crush your house, maybe just cut off the top of it. If you're going to cut it down anyway, it might be cheaper and easier to have a crew come in and cut off a portion of it so that when it falls, it won't reach your house. Secondly, remember, when you cut off the top, you're cutting off all the wind-catching area of it. And you're reducing the height, so it will not catch as much wind, and it may not fall. The reason the tree is going to fall is because of two things: high winds, and secondly, long, heavy torrential rains, both of which we are experiencing and we will continue to experience more and more frequently. The heavy rains will loosen up the ground so that the roots lose their strong grip in the ground, and now the winds come along and blow down the weakened, the poorly founded tree, and the tree blows over and crushes the house. So deal with those trees. That's number one. Secondly, you can protect your roof from being blown off of your house. The Weather Channel did this. You get this glue gun. It's some kind of at Home Depot or any home improvement store. It's a glue gun, like a caulking gun. You get up in your attic and run a bead of glue all the way along the upper rafters. You know where the sloped rafters of your attic roof, on the inside of your attic, where they meet plywood sheathing on the roof? Well, you run a bead of glue right along every single rafter where it joins to the plywood sheathing covering the roof. And now you will have increased your roof strength tremendously. Without that glue, the nails will get pulled right out of the roof by the heavy winds. And once the roof gets blown off, you have nothing but an empty hole in the top of your house. The rain comes in and your house is totally destroyed. Well, thank you for inviting me. I'm glad to be able to help.